You are listening to the Money Making Marketing Podcast. We are your guides to making money with marketing. I'm Louis Sanford from The Mailman, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Isaac Jackson from Volta Media and Jenny Huddleston from Avon Marketing. On this week's show, we are going to be looking at how to use LinkedIn to grow your network. So obviously you can't really network on LinkedIn if you don't have any connections, and there's a bit of a process to go through when it comes to deciding who to connect with in order to make the most of your LinkedIn activity. So first of all, how do you define your LinkedIn audience?
So to begin with, like with everything in your marketing strategy, you need to go back to your goals. Like, what are your goals? We talked about this in a previous episode not so long ago, so make sure you go and check that out, because it's really important that you do know what your goals are, because everything else you do is shaped around them. So once you know your goals, you can then figure out who your target audience is. And they're the people that you want to be connecting with on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's it. It's, if you know exactly who you want to connect with, then it makes it a lot easier to search for them people. And it kind of goes back to this whole kind of quality versus quantity. It means you can really dial into specific people versus kind of accepting every connection request you get, or just kind of connecting with people willy-nilly. And I think it can be hard, because obviously on kind of like the newsfeed, the homepage section of LinkedIn, as kind of you connect with more people, that will become kind of even more clogged with people's posts and things. So if you're connecting with people that kind of have no relevance to you, or you know you kind of never want to work with, it will become harder to network and create these relationships with people, because, yeah, it you're just overpowered with people versus looking for quality connections.
So I guess it does come down completely to your goals. What do you want LinkedIn to do for you? I mean, personally, I find LinkedIn quite like inspiring. So I follow some, or connected with some people who will post content that I find inspiring or educational. But at the same time, I'm connecting with people who I'd like to do business with, or I know they'd be useful connections to me because they are connected with lots of people who I would like to do business with. So I almost see it as like, if you could build your own networking group and choose who was in that room in order to help you get the best possible results, that's almost how you should build your LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It kind of taps into like this whole quality versus quantity debate. It's something you see a lot on LinkedIn, people saying like, well, what's more important, having a lot of connections on LinkedIn or having quality connections on LinkedIn? And to be honest, it's a bit of both, isn't it, really? You kind of want to be in that middle ground of you have a lot of quality contacts, because the better the quality the contact, the more engagement and interactions you're going to be having on your content. But also, the more quantity you have of those quality contacts means you're going to be having even more engagement.
Yeah, plus there's something on LinkedIn where when you go on people's profiles, you can see how many people, how many connections they have. So let's say you've got 230 connections, that will appear on your profile. But is it when you get over 500 connections, it'll just say 500 plus? So that's also something. Sometimes when people are wanting to connect with you, if you have quite a very small network, they might not see you as a quality contact themselves. So actually, if you get over the 500 connections mark, that's actually makes you look like you know quite a few people, and it actually makes your profile look like a kind of more worthwhile profile to connect with too. So yeah. That's it. But I think you're totally right. It's all about, I personally would go for quality, and some people ask, should I, when I get to like, say, like 1,000 connections, would you ever recommend going back and kind of culling people? And I don't think it's a bad thing. Sometimes you connect with someone and sometimes they can just bombard you with, I don't know, like salesy messages, or the content they're posting is just not relevant to you, or you see it too much. You can easily sort of unconnect or unfollow them, can't you?
Yeah, you don't really want to be connected to every Tom, Dick and Harry on the platform, do you really, at the end of the day? Like, you do want to have that quality kind of connections. But, I mean, going back and kind of culling your connections, I mean, it's not something that I've ever done personally. But I can see the allure for that. I have occasionally removed people when they've been spamming me, but that's kind of like on a case-by-case basis. To be honest, somewhere that I have called a lot more than other places is my Facebook page. Well, my like the amount of people I've removed that I've like met over the years, and it's like, I'm never going to speak to you again. Just get rid of them on there, you know.
I guess it's a tough one on LinkedIn, because when you sort of do that culling, people worry like, oh God, what if, I don't know, Sandra, who I network with, finds out that I'm no longer connected. And that's it. I think you've got to be, and you can potentially upset people, but that's why you've got to be quite picky. As in, sometimes I get it where I'll get a connection and it's somebody like in America wanting to connect. And let's say I've connected with them for whatever reason. I kind of think, well, if I disconnect, unconnect from you and we're no longer connected on LinkedIn, it's not the end of the world, because am I ever going to meet you? No. Are we ever likely to do business? Probably not. So that's it. Just be picky. And it's all about, always think of people kind of in your connection list as people who add value. So if they don't sort of bring you much value, whether like Lou was saying, whether it's they're just giving you great tips and educating you, or whether you could actually potentially work with them, if they're not doing that, then it probably is getting rid of them.
But a client of mine is an architect, and he basically, when I first met him, he had literally just removed pretty much all his LinkedIn connections. He had like over 1,000. He removed pretty much all of them and just started fresh.
Did he ever say why?
I asked this, and he said that he felt like lots of the people he was connected to just weren't going to benefit. They weren't going to be of any sort of like use to him. But I also thought, at the time I thought, but surely it's still people who could see your post and recommend you to people, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then, since then, he has then connected with loads and loads of people who are all relevant to him, whether that's like surveyors and everyone in his property industry. And he's really like concise about who he connects with. And he does so well from LinkedIn. He engages, comments loads, people's posts often. And it's just, he does so well from it. And I completely understand it.
I think it was this weekend I read something saying basically the number of followers you have, or in this case connections you have, it doesn't mean their actual potential customers or paying customers. So you might have, I don't know, let's say you've got 5,000 connections on LinkedIn, it doesn't mean all of them are going to become a customer. And that's it. I think it's important. Some people think that the more connections you have, or the more followers you have on social media, the better. But actually, all of them people you're connected with could never do business with you ever. So it's like, well, what's the point?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a brave thing to do, that architect, but actually it's probably worked out in the long run, and it's probably just, he just needed to work harder to rebuild it, and it's paid off and been worth it.
We've kind of talked about something similar to what you were just saying previously, Jenny. It's that, like, if you don't actually have the contact details for your leads, they're not really your leads at that point, are they? You know, having these connections on LinkedIn, having these connections on your social media accounts, they're not actually leads yet, because they haven't given you their contact details, so you don't know if they're actually interested. Just because they like a post or share something doesn't mean they're interested in buying your services. They need to make that kind of firm commitment first, and that's generally using something like a lead generator, or them getting out and reaching out and being in touch with you.
But I guess that kind of comes to what you were just saying then about actually reaching out. Look, I hear lots of people have different opinions on this, but when it comes to connecting with someone, should you send them a message straight away? I see lots of posts where people complain about it because they think it's just like a copy and pasted message. But then other people say that, imagine, like, because LinkedIn is basically networking online, lots of people say, would you go to a networking meeting and go up to someone and they say, hi, I'm Julie, and you say, hi, I'm Louie, in my case, and then just walk away?
See, I think it's really important that when you first want to connect with someone, I would recommend always adding a connection note, something short and snappy, or
yes,
reminding them how they've met you. So it could be like, hi, Hannah, it was great seeing you in that networking group last Friday, it'd be great to connect, or whatever. And then that kind of follow-up, I think once they've connected, you're in the forefront of their mind. But I think when you kind of follow up, it's a case of saying, oh, thanks very much for connecting. It'd be great to find out more about what you do, versus saying like, hi, Hannah, thanks for connecting. I do this, 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 and it'd be a sales pitch. Because I've had it where I've connected to people and they've just spammed me instantly. And you think, well, this is what you want from this connection. And I think it's really important to show kind of what value you might add to them. But I think it's important to follow up pretty instantly.
I think like the key really with your connection note is to personalize it, you know.
Yeah,
like have a general kind of template that you use when you're connecting with people, but personalize it. Actually look at their profile and have a little look at what they do before you make that connection request, and tailor it to them. I love as well what you said about talking more about how you can help them, like, get more referrals and that kind of thing, as opposed to being straight in on the sales and be like, give me your money. You know, you don't want to do that. No one wants to buy from someone who's like straight up in your face and like, you buy from me. It's annoying.
No, I think it should be more, I've seen this very sort of clever sales tactic where someone goes in and will say, I do a lot of work with architects, and I'm always on the lookout to speak to more because I can always pass you a lot of work. It'd be great to find out more about you, because instantly they think, oh, if I talk to this person, they will potentially pass me a lot of work. So instantly you're more likely to get a response to them versus you just telling them all about you and kind of selling to them. I think that follow-up message, it's all about getting some sort of one-to-one or something, or like organizing a coffee versus trying to do your sales pitch. Because I always think when you get kind of in front of people or you get on the phone, you're way more likely to convert them.
Well, it's just relationship building, isn't it? I mean, we've mentioned it before. I think we've said how, imagine you meet someone in like a relationship way, you're not just going to meet them and ask them to marry straight away, like the equivalent of selling to them. You are going to ask them for that next step, a gentle step, a step that's enough of a commitment that shows they're interested, but it's not too much that they're going to be like, whoa, 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 like this guy is a psychopath or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's just it's a balancing act, isn't it? And but I think you made a point there, Isaac, about kind of getting to know them. It's one thing I'd recommend to my clients. Let's say you've got someone you really want to work with. I would say like a week or two beforehand, just have a look on their profile, or if you see a post that they've done, just comment on it. And I think if you can do that even before trying to make a connection, your name will kind of appear. And then when you connect, you could say something like, oh, hi, Hannah. I saw your post the other day. It was brilliant. It'd be great to connect and find out more about what you do. But if you can kind of, instead of sort of coming out the blue, if you can interact a little bit with kind of what they've been posting already, brilliant. And if you can't, then like you said, it's that connection message, that connection note needs to be super personal and sort of not over the top and salesy for sure.
I think as well, like in your connection note, don't go straight into like trying to arrange a one-to-one. I think that's something you should hold off on until they've connected with you. So if they've accepted your connection request, do a little follow-up and just be like, hey, thanks for connecting. As I mentioned in my previous message, it'd be great to learn a lot more about what you do. If you fancy having a virtual coffee with me, let's book in a one-to-one.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, you know.
I'd agree.
It's a really good way to kind of continue that conversation from the moment they've connected.
Yeah, because I think if you kind of jump the gun in that connection note and sort of say, oh, I'd love to chat to you, again, that could be perceived as, just want to get me on the phone and sell to me. So if it can be a bit more general, just it'd be great to connect, or it was great meeting you at this networking event, or, oh, your name keeps cropping up, or even better, I've had it kind of really good success if you could name drop somebody else. So I don't know, if I said like, hi, Hannah, Isaac Jackson, sort of your name came up when in conversation, or recommended that I connect with you. Things like that is good too, if you can have like name drop, because then it makes it even more kind of personal. I've always found that's worked quite well.
It's a good idea, and I've actually done a similar thing through, so I'm part of BNI, and on BNI they have like a network list basically of everyone who's in it. And one thing that works well is by messaging people on LinkedIn and saying, I found you on BNI Connect, which is their thing. which therefore puts something in common, and that's like the same as having a person in common. It's like helps you get through that door, and by doing that, it works really well at getting one-to-ones with people.
Yeah, that's it. It's just that commonality, isn't it? Trying to find, I think that's a really, really good one. It's just more likely. It increases the chances of them connecting with you, and then that's when you can hit them with, you know, whatever message, that follow-up message.
Well, once you've connected to these people, like, what would you recommend doing next? Like, how do you start to develop and build that relationship with your network?
I think the biggest thing that people kind of forget about, they'll connect with people or they'll be on LinkedIn, but actually they're not that active on LinkedIn. So my biggest thing is spending, like, I don't know, 10 minutes to half an hour, like a day, commenting and liking other people's posts. Because by doing that, you're building those relationships. Whereas if you're not active at all, then, you know, people aren't going to get to know you, or vice versa.
Yeah, I mean, it's called networking, isn't it? So you can't just add people and expect them to just engage with your content. You need to engage with theirs as well and show an active interest in your network.
Yeah.
It's literally like I said before, like, I can't think who it is, but some people have compared it to being at a network event and just going up and saying, like, hi, I'm Louis, nice to meet you, and then walking off and doing it to everyone else.
Like what's the point of that?
Yeah. Like, you're not going to know anything about anyone. You're not going to be able to help anyone, and no one's going to be able to help you.
To kind of, like, continue that analogy a bit as well, like, it's if you're not actually commenting and engaging with other people's content, it's the equivalent of going to a networking event and all you do is talk about yourself and what you do. You're not showing an active interest in others, you know. Everyone hates that person that turns up to their morning networking events and spends 10 minutes doing their 60 seconds, and it's like, what is wrong with you?
I think we're here to learn about
each other, not just to learn about you, you know.
But I think it's just in life, those people that never ask you anything back, it's that, isn't it? But I think it's as well, if you kind of expect people to interact with you, you have to do it back. Because I've found if kind of you spend, I don't know, X amount of minutes a day commenting and liking other people's posts, those people's posts that you've commented on are more likely to do it back to you. And then that will massively help with your reach as well. So obviously if they comment or like a post, then potentially all their network will see it too. And you can find the people you interact with most are probably the people that will interact with you most too. And you could probably guarantee every time you post, it'll be the same, I don't know, 30 people. And that's where you can create them really strong connections. And it's also a really good one. Let's say you comment on a post and you have a bit of back and forth. When you actually see them next time in person, it's kind of a reason to go up to them and say, oh, it was great. Great post you did the other day, or that picture you put up of, I don't know, the office reopening or something. It's also kind of a good in for you to get chatting to them again and things like that.
It's a social network ultimately, isn't it? And you build on those relationships with people, and that's ultimately what it is, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that's it. Can I ask you guys a question? When you do kind of interact with people, how do you do it? Is it liking, commenting, or sharing? What do you feel is most powerful? I've always said commenting, but what do you guys think?
I think commenting's most powerful because you can then start a conversation. And that's like, just liking something doesn't really mean as much.
I mean, obviously with the likes now on LinkedIn, you've got the different kind of reactions you can do. You want to, if you're going to like do a reaction to a post, like, you want to do something that's going to stand out a bit more, you know, like, what's going to stand out more, if you just like it or if you heart it and say that you love this post, you know, that's going to have much more of an impact on someone's day and make it something that they remember, like, oh, this person loved my post, that's cool.
Not only that, but if we're going to go into kind of algorithms, if you get like, you know, like a heart, a reaction like that on your post, or you get more people commenting, LinkedIn sees that as, oh, that post is getting really high levels of engagement, and it'll keep kind of pushing it to the top of people's kind of news feeds, to the home section on LinkedIn. So that's another thing, that's kind of why you should be doing it to other people and then trying to kind of get it back on your post, because if you want your content to kind of be seen by even more people, The kind of more reactions, comments, etc. that you get, kind of the better for that side and algorithms and things as well.
Very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's one of these things, you know, by the time this is aired, it could have all changed because that's social media for you. But it's just that they see kind of high commenting and things like that. It's seen
and
as
you,
one
and
of...
you commenting was, because I mean, I see on my post, like, if a post maybe been up for a day or so, and then someone else, and it's gone quiet, but then someone sees it and comments on it, then suddenly it seems to get like an influx of extra likes and engagement.
That's it. Sometimes when I go on LinkedIn and kind of go to like the home feed, the first post I'll see is a post someone's done like a week ago, but it's because it's still getting high levels of engagement. That's why it's still kind of at the forefront.
There is one thing to remember with LinkedIn, and that's recently they've kind of been pushing more towards, like with your Facebook, like with your Twitter, getting you to pay for advertising. A lot of the things that work really well on LinkedIn are things that are posted natively to the platform, as opposed to like linking out to an external website or that kind of thing. They're doing this because they want more engagement actually happening within the platform itself and less kind of taking people away from the platform so they can boost their ad revenues.
Yeah, I guess in a bit when we'll probably go into kind of that content side of things. It's things like on LinkedIn, there's things called articles, which is basically like a blog post that is actually on LinkedIn. So things like that, they'd probably prefer you to do an article versus adding like a third-party link to your... Yeah. Things like that, but that's it. I think it's and people often ask that, should I be advertising and things like that. But I think if you obviously you can do if you want to kind of bump up that reach and things, but I think if you're interacting with other people on LinkedIn and getting that back and posting consistently, etc., I think, you know, you've got the sort of ability to reach potential thousands of people. So it's all about just giving it a bit of time and putting the time in yourself. And I think that's one thing people don't do, is they do one post and then kind of forget about it, and a week later maybe do another. But actually, when you've done a post, you've got to be kind of quite on it and waiting for people to comment and replying back, etc. And it's all about being really reactive, especially after posting. And that's one thing people don't do. They don't dedicate time, and then that's when they don't see the results.
I see that quite a lot. Some people I follow, they post a lot, but they don't ever reply to comments at all.
And that's one thing you should do over across all social media platforms, is when people comment, reply to them. Some people think, well, what do I say? And it could be as easy as, oh, thanks very much. If someone says, this is a great post, be like, oh, that thanks so much. Or it doesn't have to be massive.
Yeah.
The longer, actually, the comment, the better. But it doesn't have to be. But it's just the fact you've acknowledged their comment. They like it, and also again, LinkedIn like it because they see it as a kind of active post that's getting high engagement. So it's kind of good for everybody, good for building relationships, and then good for your reach as well.
Yeah, I've never really understood why people would create content on LinkedIn, but they're not engaged with the audience they're building. You know,
I think it comes down to
really silly.
Yeah, and I think it just comes down to a time thing. People don't have the time, or maybe they don't understand that importance of that whole building relationship thing, but so many people do it, and I'm sure we've probably all been guilty of it at times. But yeah, it's really important with any social media post to always reply to comments. Yeah, for sure.
So something I don't really know much about is business pages, and I'm sure we will cover them probably on a different day, but I see lots of people sharing content from their business page. I mean, I don't know anything about business pages, like I say. I don't think I have one.
I guess people kind of ask, are they worth having? I think 100% your personal LinkedIn profile carries way more weight, and that's the one people kind of interact with. But I think having a business page, it can make you look quite established, and you can kind of push out slightly different messages. And then, like you said, kind of people can share from it. But yeah, it's always kind of that question, should I have one, should I not?
I guess it probably will come down to like the strength of a brand, really, because ultimately, like, if people see it as a company, then, well, you don't really have a conversation with a company, do you? However, if you can, if it is a strong brand and it has a personality to it, then people do, like with any strong brands across all different social media platforms, that's, they're the ones who get the most engagement. And I guess, especially B2B, it's quite, lots of businesses don't have that stronger brand, like personality.
And I think people want to deal with people. So I think that's maybe a point, especially if you're quite a big organization with lots of employees. Obviously, your employees can link their profiles to that business page, which can obviously lead them back to that brand and things. And then also, your employees can share content and kind of become like employee advocates and kind of cheerleaders for the company. So there's that side as well. If you've got a lot of employees, make sure they're connecting to that business page, and it'll just kind of help with that overall kind of reach and brand awareness.
So Jenny, what would your recommendations be then between like how you can use your content across both your personal and your business pages? Like how would you differentiate that content?
I think it's a tough one, because a lot of things you're going to say on your personal account, you could probably say on the business account too. And that's why I think it's I think you can be slightly more kind of salesy on the business one. And then again, it's always, people still like to see the behind the scenes stuff on the business page. But I think obviously the thing about your personal account is that's when you can show some of your personality. And so, for example, I think, obviously, we'll get into content, but it could be, for example, if you've gone for a dog walk, it could be showing a picture or doing a video with that side and talking about kind of the personal side and how it's affected you and linking it back to the business. So that probably won't be appropriate for a business page, but it is for your personal LinkedIn. So I think it's a tough one, because, like I said, there are lots of messages that you could say on both. But I think the business page, it just needs to be business and less personal. And that's what you can do on your personal LinkedIn, show more of the behind the scenes stuff and things like that, really.
So I guess going on from the type of posts that we're recommending people make on across their personal and their business page, what content would you guys actually recommend people put out? How often should you post? Should it be long written text? Should it be videos? Or what are your opinions on that?
I think you need to have a variety of different types of content. Like personally, I think you want to be doing a photo-based post once per week. You want to do some sort of graphic once per week. You want to have just like a text-based post once per week, a video post once per week. I think you get the point. Use a mixture of content, because that way you're kind of tapping into a variety of different audiences.
Yeah, I mean, things like videos, they get phenomenal engagement. But it's funny, I spoke to someone the other day and they said, oh, well, I don't have time to watch videos. I'd much prefer to kind of scan copy and look at an image. And that's it. It's all about mixing up your content. And we've obviously always talk about this. It's test and measuring what works. But I mean, personally, I always recommend to my clients to add imagery or something to a post versus just having a post with just text. I think with like adding an image to a post, you get like 6 times more engagement than if it was just text. But kind of like Isaac said, it's worth testing, because for some people, just a text post works really well for them and things. So it's all about testing and measuring. Try it all, see what works best, and then you can put your effort into doing more videos or creating more graphics or something like that.
It makes sense completely, because like you say, people process information in different ways. Like personally, I'll often watch videos, but I like them to have subtitles on. I like watching a video, but I like reading through a subtitle. Or I'll read long copy. I do find myself, for example, on Facebook ads, if someone's made a video, which is maybe a minute and a half long, which most of them seem to be for like business sales ads, I'll generally just read the copy. It'll be long copy, like scrolling right through it, but I'll read all. And it's just how I personally process information. So I guess, like you say, it's testing and measuring, seeing which gets the best results from a people you want to respond.
Yeah, I think it's sort of, you might say like a generational thing a bit in terms of, they always say for it, if you're trying to target like a younger demographic, videos are kind of the way to go. A lot of younger people, they just absorb information better by watching videos, but maybe like a slightly older generation who still kind of love newspapers or have been used to kind of written media, that's how they absorb information better. So it's just as well probably going back to who you're connected with and kind of that target audience as to what type of content you should be pushing out there.
So I guess when it comes to videos, because obviously videos are so popular, Isaac, what would you recommend in terms of how should a video be made for LinkedIn? How long should it be?
So this is a difficult one. It's very content dependent. So typically the length of videos that perform best on LinkedIn are 1 to 2 minutes, with more of a shift towards that 1 minute mark. But depending on that content, it may work better as a long form piece of content. So we're talking 5 to 10 minutes. Again, it really depends on who your audience is and what the content is. And it's a judgment you need to make when uploading that content. But like as a general rule of thumb, you want to aim for between 1 to 2 minutes.
Okay. And I know I see a lot of things about like DIY video versus paying a professional for like really high quality video. What's your opinion on that?
Yes. It's something I talk about quite a lot on my LinkedIn myself. And that's every business should be using a mixture of both DIY and professional videos. You want your professional videos because it makes your brand look great, but you want those DIY videos because they add a bit of personality to your brand and can start helping you build more personalized and personable relationships. But just because you're going down the DIY video route doesn't mean you can't outsource. You can still shoot those videos, but have a company come in, such as my company, to deal with the editing and the publishing and the promotion of those videos. So it can save you a lot of time going down that route.
Makes a lot of sense. It does. I mean, I know exactly what you mean. I personally find, but like, I guess, from a personal page to a business page, it's almost like most of the personal pages I follow will make handheld videos on their phone, for example, or they'll set their phone up with some featured content, which is the higher quality, like professional videos. I guess it's just getting that mix and, again, testing and measuring, isn't it, probably?
Yeah, it's all about testing and measuring. Like, some of my clients, like, they pay me to do all of their video content for them, so I make it all professional, but it's still done in that kind of DIY way. It looks like they've got some skills to actually make videos, you know. It's one of those things. Like, when I started making videos, they were awful, but now they look great. I'm still doing it myself, though, you know?
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of the style, and I guess with videos, the more you do kind of yourself, the better you'll get. And I guess it's little things you'll probably recommend, like make sure your lighting or audio is bob on. There's nothing worse than if it's a really like dimly lit room, or
if there's loads of sunlight in your face and you look like a vampire or something.
I guess even if you do DIY ones, there's still little tricks.
There's two kind of core things that will make people click away from your video. The most important thing you can do with your video is have good audio. If your audio is not good, people are going to click off straight away. The second thing is exposure. Can they see your face properly? Is it all grainy or mushy? I mean, this comes after the audio. Like, an analogy I like to use quite a lot is, let's say you're pirating a movie, you know, something everybody has done. And if you say you haven't, you're clearly lying. Everyone's pirated a film. But like, when you're looking through these films and you're trying to find one to watch, if it's got bad image but good audio, you're more likely to actually watch that one over one which is bad audio but great video, because you want to be able to hear what's going on as well. Like, audio is the most important part of video.
I guess it's that whole thing you always talk about, you know, the storytelling side. Obviously, you can do parts of that through imagery, but it's probably about the wording and what you're saying. That's what people are paying attention to.
It's because your brain creates pictures rather than, like, you can read a book and you're just reading words, but in your brain, like, the amount of times I've read a book, for example, when I was a kid reading, like, fiction books, I mean, a film would come out about that book and I'd be like, that's not how it happened in my brain. And you create a picture yourself. Whereas if you're watching something, you don't create a story or dialogue as well, do you?
So something that you might find interesting, not everybody can visualize things in their brain. I'm one of those people. I have never been able to visualize anything. So like when I was in school and the teachers were like, oh, visualize this. I honestly just thought they were meaning like in a hypothetical kind of sense. I didn't think they actually meant visualize it and make the image appear in your brain. And it's actually a condition known as aphantasia or aphantasia. It's something like that. Yeah. So I'm one of the unlucky people that can't visualize things.
But that probably shows the whole thing of your different demographics and how people's brains work different. So why you should probably mix up the type of content you're doing. But that's really interesting.
Yeah, like I think that's why video works so well for me.
That makes sense.
Because I can't visualize things myself, so I need to make things to visualize it, you know.
Yeah, and have that there, like tell that story. And what would, obviously, the debate of how often you should post, what would you guys personally say?
Daily.
What about you, Louis?
Post as often as you can.
Yeah, I would say as often as you can. I'd say if you cannot post daily, then don't beat yourself up about it. But just try it. As we're saying, like, I'd focus on, it's better to do 2 posts a week that are really good posts than a post every day that's just like, Today, my dog jumped on the bed and made me spill my coffee on me. I honestly, you see posts like that, and they're like, and this made me realise how significant life is. And oh, bollocks. Some people post some absolute shite on LinkedIn.
they really do.
But in that same breath, I've found that there's, like, I've got a certain connection that kind of shares everything. And probably share stuff that maybe isn't quite appropriate for LinkedIn. But sometimes, every time I see that person posting, I can't help but read it. And that's, I find that terrifying at times. Like, yeah, why am I reading this?
Well, I agree with, like, sharing personal stuff. Because we like people. People are interested in other people. But I just mean, if it's just, like, some bollock story that's irrelevant.
You're creating content for the sake of it.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I think that's the whole thing of quality versus quantity. Obviously, the more you can post, the better, but it has to be high-quality content, otherwise it's pointless anyway. And I think one thing to remember with all social media is kind of, no matter how many times a day, a week, or whatever you decide to post, you have to make that consistent. So if you know, if you set yourself the goal of, I'm going to post every day for the next month, but then after that month you've kind of run out of content, then it's not sustainable. So just really think about like the long game and kind of your content strategy and things, and think about that for LinkedIn. And if you can't sustain one post a day, then you shouldn't kind of start it.
I mean, Gary Vee kind of, I think, has a really good take on this. And it's taking like a larger piece of content. Let's say you've done a talk somewhere and breaking that down into smaller bite-sized chunks that you can use
again and again
across your different social media channels, and turn this one piece of content into hundreds, you know.
That's the best thing.
It takes a lot of work.
And it does take time. But if you can like dedicate half a day, for example, into cutting down a long video into short clips, and then into like screenshots, and then text, like graphics, basically, and then taking the audio off and writing key points and even just audio bites. And if you can do Isaac's fancy thing where the sound waves are all wiggling everywhere, then that looks cool. Sadly, I can't do that, but yeah, I mean,
yeah, like
there are so many different
things. What we do with the podcast, like as an example, is we take the episode, which is audio, we pull out a social media highlight, we then post it onto our blog. So we've got our blogs as one piece of content, we've got it going out onto the actual podcast platforms as another piece of content, we've got our social media posts about it on all of our various platforms as another piece of content, and then we've got that highlight video that comes like a week later, which again is pushing out onto loads of different platforms and is a new piece of content. It's taking that one thing and making the most of it.
Yeah, I think people worry with, I've found speaking to people, sometimes people worry saying, oh, but I'm kind of repeating myself and people get bored. But actually, it's really important kind of with all social media, because let's say you post on a Monday, potentially not all your connections will see that. Well, it's guaranteed not everyone will see that. So it's really important to kind of reinforce your message and technically repeat yourself, but kind of spin it in something slightly different. So let's say you have written a blog and you want to point people to that blog. make sure you're sharing that kind of throughout the month, but spin it in different ways so it catches people's attention.
Really good point, yeah.
At the same time, though, like, that's based on the assumption that every single person is going to see every single piece of content that you're producing, which isn't the case. They're going to see maybe like 1 in 10 pieces of content, you know.
That's what I mean, but that's why I think you need to repeat your key messaging things, because... Yeah. Yeah, it's that.
I don't even think you necessarily have to put a different twist on it. You know, it's...
Yeah, that is true. But I think it's just that whole thing of if kind of you're worried that, you know, you're pushing out the same post with the same graphic every single time, and if you're worried people will get bored, it's just kind of changing your wording and bits like that. But yeah, I think no matter what you do, it's important. Make sure you have your kind of key messages in there. And, you know, it's not a bad thing to push it out multiple times. Because that's it. You all know, Isaac, with video and things, it takes a long time to create these videos. So why not get like a month's worth of content out of it? Because it makes it worth the money and the time, doesn't it?
There's nothing more annoying like than when I've done videos for clients and they don't pay for the marketing assistance on releasing it. And then they literally post the video once and then that's it. It's like... You want to be reposting that for years and years to come because you've spent thousands on it. So why would you not?
Get the most out of it, that's it.
Yeah, you want it to keep working for you and not just have it as a one thing and then be like, oh, why didn't this work? Well, because you didn't actually use it properly.
There's a key thing actually about marketing. I think it was on a podcast I listened to, and they said, you're always going to get bored of your marketing before anyone else does because you see your marketing all the time. You might post something a few times and think, oh, fucking, I must be really pissing people off. Like,
yeah, I've posted the same old, yeah.
But realistically, most people have only seen it once or twice at most. And they might just have not been in the right time or place to watch what you have to say or read what you have to say or whatever it might be. And there's always going to be more people. You need to make the most, like Isaac says, of any marketing you do.
Plus, before this podcast, I mean, you were saying, Louis, you after seeing the same post on Facebook 10 times, yeah. You finally clicked on it. So it's that. It takes, is it something between like up to 7 times for someone to see your brand or your message to actually interact with it? So that's really important. Don't just think, oh, I'll do it once. It's that. It can take
on average multiple 7 touch
times
points.
For someone. There we go. For someone to see it, for then actually... I don't know, click the link or comment or do something. And obviously a lot of your posts will have call to actions in, so follow the link or get in touch, and it'll take them maybe up to 7 times for them to actually do it. So that's why kind of repeating is not a bad thing.
I can't remember what exactly it's called, but it's that thing where obviously depending what you're like charging, say like what is like how expensive is what you're selling, then it's going to take longer basically for people to actually trust you enough, because it's a bigger decision. The bigger the decision it is for someone, the more
like deliberating.
They need to justify it in their brain almost. They need to trust that decision. If it's a small thing like reading a blog, people are way more inclined to make that because it's an easy decision. It's not like a big commitment. Dan Kennedy, a very famous marketer and copywriter, I think he charges like 18 grand a day or something for marketing consulting. He in his book No BS, like direct marketing or something like that, talks about it. Brilliant book, recommend it.
It's a good point there, that. Yeah, I never really thought about it like that, but that's it. If you're gonna buy a car, or you do way more research and way more deliberation at clicking through versus, yeah, like you said, just click through to read this blog, it's very different. So yeah, that is a very good point.
Yeah. So other types of content then, I guess. So we've talked about video, we've talked about how frequently you should post, but what actually sort of content should we be posting? Like we've said, not salesy, that's a key thing.
Well, yeah, I think when it comes to content and all social media, we've talked about it before, it's that 80-20 rule. So 80% of your content should be like entertaining or educational or add value, and maybe that 20% can be slightly more salesy. But it's all about kind of testing what works and things. And I think LinkedIn, it's I personally don't like to share too much personal kind of stuff, but I think you have to. And it's just getting that balancing act. So I said about you might have walked the dog. So I did a post a while back saying, oh, I feel really lucky today. I've managed to get some time to walk the dog. And then I linked it back to kind of my business and my key message, saying a lot of people don't have the time because they're focusing on things that they don't know much about, like social media. So then it said, well, if you're short of time and need help, sort of get in touch type things. I think it's good to do personal posts, but I personally would always try to link it back to business. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
Yeah, no, I do agree there. Yeah, it does need to link back. And to be honest, but one of the key things you mentioned there was value and how the content you're posting needs to add value. And there's so many ways you can go about adding value, like whether you're entertaining them and making them have a laugh, you know, that's adding value to their lives. If it's educational content and you're teaching them something, learning new skills is valuable to people. You know, it's all about making sure that everything you do is going to make someone somewhere feel like they have gained something.
Yeah, and I guess if you manage that, then it'll keep them kind of coming back for more and it'll keep them engaged. And that's the key thing. If you keep people engaged, it'll keep kind of people on message and they're more likely to work with you or click that link or whatnot.
It's that whole know, like, and trust thing, isn't it? The more you help someone, the more they're going to feel like they know you, the more they like you, the more they trust you. And it's just adding that level of authority, really. And one thing, actually, when it comes to that authority status, is thought leadership posts. It's not why I'd usually call them, I don't really have a name, but that's what people call them, apparently. But it's basically when you're, like, putting out a thought or an opinion on, say, your industry or your services, and it's setting you as that, as an expert, as a figure of authority. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah,
an authoritative
that's right.
Figure, which can be really good, to be fair, because lots of people will comment then saying, oh, this is really useful, or it's really thought provoking. It's that same thing. You're trying to get people to think about doing things differently, and people like to do things differently. They like to stand out. So I think that can work really well.
I think on some posts and things often recommend, yeah, or like ask questions in posts or kind of encourage people to have that dialogue with you. So there's certain things now, like on LinkedIn as well. Don't know if you guys have ever done them. You know, you can do things like polls or things like that. So it's just too good to not interact with, and it really encourages that engagement. And that's kind of what you're after when it comes to content.
One of the things I love about polls is it's like market research on a micro scale. You know, you can really dive in not exactly deeply, but like into the surface level of certain ideas and thoughts you're having. And it's a good way to gauge whether you want to do more research down into a certain path with a certain thing. You know, I do think they're a really fantastic way to just kind of tap into some of the ideas people have around topics relating to your industry.
It's that same thing I was just saying before. It's about like, it's an easy thing for someone to do. It's way easier than for someone to comment out of their thoughts, because you're giving them an option which they can just tap. And it's almost as easy as liking a post, really. Polls always seem to get the most engagement. And as Isaac says, they're so good for market research. I mean, I use them at Christmas time, for example, when we're doing Christmas cards. And I asked people a couple of things, like a few polls, like, who is working in the office, because obviously because of COVID lots of people weren't, and then ask people if they were sending Christmas cards or if they're struggling for time, basically. And then I basically built a bit of a list of people who were in the office and they wanted to send Christmas cards but they didn't have time to, who I could then target with marketing because they were qualified as a prospect for me ultimately.
And then obviously by then people engaging with your post, that'll help with your reach because potentially
yeah,
more
exactly.
People in their network and da-da-da and so on. But I think as well, you can be quite clever with it and kind of advertise services. So like with you, Louis, you've got your kind of new avocado kind of, you know, doing cards and things like that. And like that, you could be clever with that and say, oh, I've set up kind of a new arm of the business, avocado, and then ask them a question about it. When you're browsing online, would you prefer to do X or Y? So then you're getting a bit of insight, but then also kind of saying, oh, I've got a new kind of venture or things like that. So
it's a good thought, that, because yesterday I was working on a task on like around building an avatar, basically. And a question was, where does my audience get their information from? Like, when do they need information? Where do they go? And I was thinking, how am I supposed to know this? Like, do they Google it, or what do they do? Do they go to YouTube? Do they read books? And actually putting a poll out, literally saying, when you need to know something, when you need some information, where do you get that information? Could work really well. It's just an easy way of, it's market research, isn't it, ultimately? Like,
yeah, but as well, on the front of that, say I'm doing some research into my new business venture.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is the name. Can you help type thing? So yeah, it's kind of the advantage of both, really.
Yep, very true.
I think a really good thing you can do, and often encourage people to do when they're posting, is try to tag other people into their posts. So for example, let's say they've just had like a meeting, they could do a post saying, oh, it was great to catch up with Louis today. Make sure they tag that person in. And it could be like a brief overview of kind of what they've touched upon or things like that.
Something I use quite a bit. Like if I'm on a shoot with a client and I'm posting like a little behind the scenes photo, I will always tag the client in, because it's then tapping into like their audience as well. And it's showing some of the work I've been doing for this person. It's a really, really great tool is tagging people in.
That's it. And I think it not only helps to build relationships, because obviously if you had a meeting or I had a great one-to-one today with Louis, it reinforces that relationship, because Louis's likely to comment saying, oh, it was great to catch up with you too and talk about XYZ. But then also it helps with kind of your reach, because then if Louis likes or comments or shares it, then all his connections will potentially see it too. So I think there's two advantages, that relationship building and that reach as well.
The person you tag as well is never going to complain about being tagged and promoted by you, are they, either? So it works for both parties, really.
That's it. But yeah, I've seen there's someone I'm connected with and they are absolutely brilliant. Kind of every meeting, every kind of like webinar or kind of sales thing that they do, they will tag every single person that's been on that call or been on that event in. And it just showcases what they do. And then it just massively helps to kind of get their name out there and also helps to reinforce their relationships. They absolutely nail it.
So that's been a really interesting podcast thing. I've definitely learned some new things from both of you guys, especially around the sort of lengths of videos. So videos are something I want to do, but I haven't really delved into it because I haven't really known exactly what to do. But I guess to summarize what we've talked about how to choose who to connect with and make sure you're focusing on the quality connections and not just getting as many as possible, how to then build relationships with those connections in order to maximize the potential of your LinkedIn profile, and also what you should actually be posting, because there's so many different types of content you could put out. What is going to get you the best results on your activity on LinkedIn? So if you've enjoyed this episode and would like to give us some feedback, or if you have a question you'd like us to answer, send us an email, which you can find in the description of this episode. Also, make sure to follow us on social media so you never miss an episode. We are MMM Guides on most social networks. Again, we'll have the links in the episode description. So we are Louis, Jenny and Isaac, your guides to making money with marketing.